This is your AEW Dynamite review for April 13, 2022. I am the Solemn Monster. Tonight was AEW's debut in the city of New Orleans. They were supposed to be in New Orleans a long time ago. They were supposed to run that venue back in 2020, and then the pandemic hit. Everything got shut down. So the event got rescheduled to January of this year, and then there was some kind of a scheduling conflict. They had to push it back again. Tonight, though, they finally made it. They finally made it to the Lakefront Arena in New Orleans, and the fans were rewarded for the wait by a stacked card. On paper, you look at this card that Tony Khan put together for this Dynamite show tonight, and it looked like a Clash of the Champions type special. You know, they have a TNT special coming up on Saturday night. They have quarterly specials now. You could have mistook this for one of their quarterly specials. This was like a pay-per-view lineup tonight. And the fans reacted in a very positive way. This was a hot crowd throughout the entire night, except for a couple of different spots. Can't say that I blame the crowd for it, but they were rewarded with a show that frankly makes the Battle of the Belts lineup on Saturday night look like an episode of AEW Dark. I don't think I'm exaggerating by all that much. But did it deliver? Did the show actually deliver, even though it looked great on paper? I think that what we ended up with tonight overall was a very good show. We ended up with what I thought were two great matches and two really good matches. The great matches were the opener, CM Punk and Penta Oscuro. For the first time ever, we got Punk and Penta in the ring together at the same time. I enjoyed the hell out of that match. I thought it was a hot opener. Later on, New Orleans' own Ricky Starks, absolute Ricky Starks, coming out and getting a huge hometown welcome from the crowd there in Louisiana. He and Powerhouse Hobbs pick up a much-needed win because Team Taz loses way too much. They were due for a win. They picked up a big win tonight over Swerve Strickland and Keith Lee. And Taz actually did something he usually does not do. He got physically involved in this match. I thought that was a great match. The other matches, we had the AEW Tag Team titles on the line. It was Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus defending the titles against Red Dragon. I thought they ended up having a good match with a surprise outcome that I was very... I mean, I wasn't shocked by it, but I was surprised because I expected there to be a title change tonight heading into the Texas Deathmatch on Friday with Adam Cole challenging for the AEW World title. We did not get that tonight. What we did get, though, in the main event, another good match, was Samoa Joe winning his very first Ring of Honor television title. He's been a Ring of Honor champion. I believe they said he was a Ring of Honor pure champion, never a Ring of Honor TV champion, and that is no longer the case. We got Joe and Suzuki one-on-one for the first time ever. If you enjoy a good chop battle, a good chop fest, then this was your night. Because not only did you get that in the main event, you got it in the opener. I think you got it in almost every match on this show. You got it also in the six-man tag with the Jericho Appreciation Society against Eddie Kingston, Santana, and Ortiz. But we had Punk and Penta. They were chopping the shit out of each other. And of course, Joe and Suzuki in the end, it was giving me some Kobashi vibes from the Joe Kobashi match back in 2005. It was a long time ago. But I enjoyed that main event as well. We have a new champion. What I did not enjoy, unfortunately, was the debut at the end of Dynamite tonight of the not-so-great Kali. Yes, we had Samoa Joe win the ROH TV title. The lights go out. Lights go out after Jay Lethal and Sanjay Dutt deliver their big surprise gift to Samoa Joe, which was Jay Lethal giving him the middle finger. The lights go out, and when the lights come back on, there he is. There's the Giant standing behind Samoa Joe. What did the Giant do? The Giant does what Giants always do. They lumber around. I mean, when I compare him to the great Kali, I mean, I'm talking right down to the fucking vice grip. Remember Great Khali and Batista years ago? Basketballs don't hold grudges. It became a whole meme online. Remember the basketball that he cried? I mean, we all remember Khali's vice grip, right? That's exactly what we got at the end of the show tonight. He's putting Joe down with the grip, and here comes Jay Lethal off the ropes with the lethal injection. So I don't know how much wrestling he's actually going to do. I don't know if he's just going to be a heavy for Lethal and Sanjay Dutt. We'll see exactly what role this guy is going to have. Apparently, he was the first ever Indian-born player to be drafted to the NBA. He's been training to become a wrestler. AEW signed him last year. I remember reading about it, and I promptly forgot all about him. But now we're going to be seeing a lot of him on TV. The not-so-great Khali making his debut. A very flat, unfortunate ending to the show tonight. It does not ruin what overall I thought was a very good show, but that ending sucked. And so there it is as far as what we saw there at the end of Dynamite tonight. So we kick things off. Let's get right into it here. Tony Khan. Tony Khan was really hyping this show up all week. When I looked at the lineup and I put together the description for the streaming page tonight, it really hit me. I said, holy shit, there's a lot of really great matches lined up for tonight. I wonder why. I wonder why Tony is loading the show up. It could just be the fact that, again, this date in New Orleans has been pushed back and delayed so many times. He really maybe just wanted to put together a special card for the people in New Orleans. Who knows? I'm not one to look a gift horse in the mouth. I appreciated the fact that he put together such a great lineup. I was looking forward all day to this show. But Tony Khan put this show together tonight, and he also made the announcement that there would be an overrun. And if needed, Dynamite would not have a hard stop at 10 p.m. tonight. They could go up to half an hour beyond their usual end time because there were so many matches on the show. This was a very ring-heavy show as far as the in-ring action. Not a whole lot of, you know, in-ring promos and things of that nature. It was pretty much all in the ring with a bunch of backstage segments that were very quick hits that were sprinkled throughout the entire show. And as it turned out, they went out, what did they go, 3 minutes? I think they went 3 minutes over the top of the hour, so, I mean, it's so much for the overrun. But it was a stacked show. We started out with CM Punk one-on-one against Pentagon Dark, Penta Oscuro. This is a match I was looking forward to. We got a chop battle. I mentioned if you were a fan of the Knife Edge Chops, this was your show. This was a 10 out of 10 show for you. They started out, Battle of the Chops. They got a standing ovation for it. Punk landed a tope to the floor before the first picture-in-picture. So they come back from break. Punk looked like he botched an attempt at a top rope Frankensteiner. And the world kind of stood still at that moment, because as I'm watching this, and he's clutching his knee, and I'm watching this going, oh man, this is not good. If he hurt himself, I mean, you know, Punk's obviously one of their bigger names, but especially in the storyline he's in now, if he really hurt himself, I mean, the guy, look, if he falls off the top rope, the guy's 40-something years old, it's not hard to imagine that he might hurt himself. So I saw that, I saw him clutching his knee, and I got worried. As it turns out, he was just selling, or at least I hope, he was just selling really well. He had a lot of people convinced that it was a legitimate slip-up and that he did hurt himself. Now, it may well have been a legitimate slip-up that they then wisely worked into the match. I'm thinking that's what it was. But they were wisely able to work it into the match. Even the announcers, right away, they didn't miss a beat. They jumped right on it because they probably didn't know either. So they're trying to sell it like, uh-oh, Punk now, he's, you know, he's got a leg injury. He's nursing a leg injury now. Is he going to be able to continue? And so he was hobbling around. Punk was Irish whipped into the corner, never even made it into the corner. He stumbled. He fell to the ground. And again, at that point, before I can see that he's seemingly okay, I'm just thinking, boy, you know, the timing on this cannot be any worse if this is some kind of a knee injury. But he was able to fight back. He managed to hit the top rope Rana on his second attempt, hobbled into the opposite corner, hit the rising knee strike. And at that point, I pretty much knew that he was okay. Penta was trying to snap Punk's arm, the old Pentagon arm breaker from Lucha Underground. Many an arm Pentagon broke on Lucha Underground back in the day. Not so much in AEW. Punk, though, turned it into an Anaconda Vice. Penta reached the ropes, got the break. They fought out onto the apron. Punk escaped the fear factor. He landed a high kick followed by a springboard clothesline. Hit a rising knee and a short arm clothesline after that. Punk called for the GTS, but Penta landed on his feet. So when Punk threw him off his shoulders, Penta lands on his feet. He's got a hold of Punk's leg, and he's punking him out. He does the whole Sato Miedo thing. He shoves him right in the face. He tried for the package pile driver. Punk escaped, and he got caught with an enziguri. So really, this was really picking up at this point. I was really into this back and forth. Penta landed a thrust kick, and he went for a springboard off the ropes. He was going for some kind of a springboard move, a springboard kick, I assume. But as he did the springboard off the ropes, Punk caught him perfectly right on his shoulders and hit the GTS for the win. Great finish. I love that finish. Thankfully, he didn't drop him, so it looked great. Great finish to a hot opener, I thought, between these two. And again, the whole botch thing, my guess, Punk was going to hit the Rana in that spot. He slipped. They fucked up, but they're pros. That's what veterans do. They think on their feet, and they find a way to incorporate it into the match. So after, you know, a minute went by, it was pretty clear Punk was okay. Got right back into it, and all was well. So I really enjoyed this match. Again, they could ill afford for someone like CM Punk to get hurt right now because Punk is on his way to an AEW championship match, whether it's a double or nothing or whether it's an all out in a few months. That's his new story arc. His new arc is that he's going after the champion, whoever the champion is, whether it's Hangman, Adam Cole, whoever it is. Punk in the next few months is clearly going to be challenging for the title. They can ill afford for him to go down with any kind of an injury. But thankfully, he looks to be okay. So they showed footage from earlier in the day as the Jericho Appreciation Society, their airplane, their private plane arrived on the tarmac. They're coming off the plane. Jericho's talking about how this is how sports entertainers travel. He was interrupted by some commotion in front of the plane, and we look over and we see Eddie Kingston, Santana, and Ortiz. They're yelling at Jericho from a car. And then the car speeds off, and when the car speeds off, lying on the ground are Matt Menard and Jeff Parker, formerly 2.0. They have been taken out. They're lying on the ground. They go over to see how they, you know, how they are. Parker's shoes were missing. Menard was complaining that his thumbs were dislocated, so they're all jacked up. So they went right into the next match. They didn't wait. They didn't, you know, there was no... Just right into the next one here. AEW tag team titles on the line. Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus defending their titles against Red Dragon. I said last week when I was talking about this match, I said that I was expecting a title change here because Adam Cole, their buddy, is challenging for the AEW world title on Friday. And so what better way to convince people that maybe they want all the titles? With Cole, Fish, and O'Reilly, put the tag titles on Fish and O'Reilly. I don't think we're going to get a world title change on Friday, but yeah, you want to do what you can to convince people that maybe they will. Maybe they will see a title change. I mean, the show is live. Rampage is live on Friday, so anything can happen. I'm not expecting a title change, but it's not as if it's a taped episode and the results are going to leak tonight. It's a live episode of Rampage on Friday. Anything can happen. Christian came out with the champs. He did not accompany them to ringside, though. Jungle Boy ended up on the apron. Kyle O'Reilly distracted the referee. That allowed Bobby Fish to grab Jungle Boy's arm as he was getting back in the ring. He wrenched down on the arm, and Jungle Boy fell out to the floor, heading into a picture-in-picture. Challengers were isolating Jungle Boy coming out of the break. Eventually, though, the babyfaces regained control. They hit a version of the old demolition elbow drop on Bobby Fish. Got a near fall out of it. O'Reilly put Jungle Boy in a cross arm breaker, but he reached the ropes for the break. And this was a cool spot. O'Reilly catches the dinosaur in a standing guillotine, right? So he's got him in the guillotine in the corner. Bobby Fish is up top, and he hits a top rope falcon arrow on Jungle Boy over O'Reilly and the dinosaur. So just the visual of that looked pretty cool. As the submission hold is being applied underneath, these two guys go flying overhead with the flying falcon arrow. And Fish had Jungle Boy pinned. Luchasaurus, though, shoved Fish onto O'Reilly to break it up. In the end, Luchasaurus hit the tail whip on Bobby Fish, and the champions hit their Thoracic Express finisher to retain the AEW tag team title. So Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus, they are still the champions. They were celebrating their win. O'Reilly attacked them with a chair. He hit Luchasaurus in the back of the knee, hit Jungle Boy in the back. O'Reilly helped Fish out of the ring. They're backing up the ramp to take their leave when all of a sudden we hear FTR's theme music. Big babyface reaction. They come out. They're showing off their Ring of Honor tag team titles. They're showing off their AAA tag team titles. The two teams get in a shoving match. And all of a sudden they just cut right to the next segment. And that's the end of that. I thought this was a good match. This was good. This was not, I think, the best of what these two teams could do. Perhaps they'll come back with another match again, but I thought it was good. And again, the fact that they retained the titles was surprising to me. Not necessarily a bad thing, but just surprising to me. So I said they cut to the back, right? Tony Schiavone is in the back. You're going to hear me say that a few more times here throughout this show. Tony Schiavone was in the back with the Blackpool Combat Club. Remember last week I said, after that great match on Rampage, it was Wheeler Yuta, fucking bloodbath against Jon Moxley. And I said, first of all, what a great match, right? What a great breakout showing against the, you know, one of the top guys in the company for Wheeler Yuta. He came away from there looking like a fucking badass when that match was over, even in defeat. But I said, I'm not sure if that means that he's officially part of the group or not. The way they left it, he shook hands with William Regal. Yuta did. And Moxley got up in his face and said, okay, now the work begins. So they made it sound like he is officially part of the group, but we weren't really sure. Well, now we have our answer. Wheeler Yuta is officially part of the Blackpool Combat Club. So things have progressed exactly the way I had hoped they would after Revolution. I really wanted them, once the Revolution match was over between Moxley and Danielson, before any of us had any idea that Regal was going to be brought into the company, which was just fantastic. My hope was that there would be this respect gained, they would actually unite, and they would bring one or two younger guys into the fold and kind of lead the charge. And that's what we're getting. Only it's Regal who's leading the charge, which is even better. It's not, instead of just being them two, Regal is sort of the puppet master here leading the whole thing. But they're in the back, and Regal was super excited. He was all hyped up. You could tell how excited. He was all fired up. Yuta was with them. He had his Ring of Honor Pure Championship that he recently won around his waist. They're going to be wrestling. All three of them are going to be taking on the Gun Club on Rampage this Friday night. Danielson said he's fired up because Yuta is fighting alongside them for the first time. Moxley said a few words. He says he doesn't like the Gun Club. Yuta closed the segment by saying, on Friday, the real work begins. I love it. I love it. I'm loving what they are doing with this Blackpool Combat Club. Keep doing this. I am very curious and anxious to see where it leads, what their first real group feud is going to be once they dispatch of the Gun Club and they get rid of them. Who do they move on to next? Who do they feud with next? You know, right now, Fish and O'Reilly and Cole, right? They're kind of occupied doing their thing. Cole is still, you know, challenging for the championship. Once that runs its course, we could very well have Adam Cole, Bobby Fish, Kyle O'Reilly feuding with Moxley, Danielson, Yuta, right? I mean, that's one possibility. There's a lot of groups, a lot of trios in this company, so there's really no shortage of what they could do here. So, I'm loving what they're doing with that faction. After the break, Tony Schiavone was still in the back. Didn't even leave. He just stood there. It's like this revolving door of, all right, who's next? And up next, he was in the back with Jamie Hayter and Tony Storm. And he said that even though we don't yet know the brackets for either Owen Hart Cup tournament, they have not yet been released. Tony Khan did sign one match for the first round of the Women's Owen Hart Cup. And in the opening round, it will be Tony Storm one-on-one against Jamie Hayter. Now, I don't know that I would have done that match in the opening round. I think that could have been a semifinal match, but they have made it a first-round match. So Jamie Hayter was cutting a promo here on Toni Storm, said that she's going to break her face. That was the point of this, basically. I'm going to break your face. Storm just stared at her. Toni Storm never said a word. She just stared at her. She smirked. And then she walked off. And that was the entire segment. But at least we know we are going to get a match between these two in the tournament. I'm just surprised they're doing it that early. I think back to the Queen's Cup. Queen's Cup? Queen's Crown. Queen's Crown in WWE. Right? Wasn't it in the first round that Toni Storm got bounced by Zelina Vega? Obviously, I'm hoping that history doesn't repeat itself here in the Owen Hart Cup. I'm expecting a Toni Storm win whenever that match happens. So up next, we had MJF one-on-one against Captain Sean Dean, who holds victories over MJF and Sean Spears coming into this match. They had signs yet again all plastered all over ringside with Wardlow's picture saying, if you see this man, you know, remove him immediately from the premises. Do not allow him into the building. He is barred from the building, which, of course, has worked out so well over the last few weeks. MJF had trouble unzipping his jacket. Excuse me. He had trouble unzipping his jacket once he was in the ring. Looks like it got caught on something. You know, I hate when that happens. It happened to George on Seinfeld. You know, couldn't get the zipper open. He was in the doctor's office. He was with a therapist, I think. That damn zipper, you know. It might have been his Gore-Tex. Was it his Gore-Tex jacket? I think it was the Gore-Tex jacket. I could be wrong, though. Hate when that happens. So he called Sean Spears in to try to help him. Sean Spears couldn't get the fucking thing unzipped either. Having all this trouble. As it turned out, it was just a big ruse. So he could attack Sean Dean from behind, and then he unzipped the jacket, no problem. So immediately, not even 15 seconds into this match, they cut to the back, and we see three security geeks laid out on the floor. One of them was shirtless. It looked like the morning after a fucking bachelor party in Vegas. Okay, they're just laying there. I don't know where the guy's shirt went. I don't want to know. Come back to the ring. MJF, he threw Sean Dean into the barricade at ringside. And he had his back turned, and MJF is posing, arms outstretched. And in the background, you could see walking slowly towards MJF, even though I think he had a hat on, he had a face mask on. It's very clear who it is. He pulls the face mask off. It's Wardlow! And the fans go nuts. And MJF hears the commotion. He hears the reaction. And he's confused. Because, you know, for a guy like MJF to hear the crowd cheering, it's a very confusing response. He turns around, and he sees Wardlow. Now, Wardlow doesn't grab him right away. Wardlow smiles at him, which then allows MJF to escape. right on the border of dumb baby face syndrome. Remember when I first told all of you a few years ago what dumb baby face syndrome is? We don't see too much of it in AEW, but it does rear its head from time to time. For a guy who wants his hands on MJF so badly, he was straddling the line there. Now, let's just stare at him and let him escape. MJF, he tries to escape up the ramp, and he's waving even more security people down to the ring. And every single security person he waves down, Wardlow, who is now standing at ringside, is just mowing him down. He took one of these security guys, powerbombed them hard on the apron. People are going nuts for this. Finally, MJF, he's waving so many people. He is waving so many people down to the ring, they swarm Wardlow. But throughout this entire thing, Bryce Remsburg in the ring, the referee, is counting. And so you can hear he's up to 7, he's up to 8, he's up to 9. MJF has a mic, even though he's all the way on stage. He's got a mic and he says, whoa, Bryce, hold on. And he says, whatever Tony Khan is paying you, I'll triple it if you don't count to 10. Because he doesn't want to lose, he doesn't want another loss on his record to this kid. And Remsburg, you know, at first it looks like he's kind of considering it. He drops his arms. He's like, well, and then he just says, yeah, fuck it, 10. And he counts him out. And rarely have you heard a reaction to a count out win like the reaction that this got. This place went nuts. And so that gives Sean Dean not one, but two wins now. In his career over MJF. MJF got in the ring. He shoved Remsburg. Bryce, though, shoved him back, Earl Hebner style. Remember years ago, God, it's over 20 years ago at this point. Hebner used to do that all the time to Triple H, and they did that a lot at the house shows. Triple H would shove him, and Earl would shove him back, and he would point at the emblem on his uniform and say, you know, I'm the authority figure. You can't touch me. So that's kind of what this reminded me of. Backstage, once they took Wardlow backstage, he was beating up more security guys, and then he grabbed a camera, stared right into the camera, and he made it very clear to MJF that he was not going to stop until MJF agreed to release him from his contract, that personal services contract that he has with MJF. They cut back to the ring. MJF had this terrified look on his face. I said it last week. It's genius what they've done here with Wardlow. They have found a way to get this guy even more over than he was before. Because if they want to hold off until Vegas to do the first singles match between MJF and Wardlow, that's a lot of time to kill, right? You got 6 weeks, 7, 8 weeks from Revolution when the split happened and Wardlow came out on television that Wednesday and cut that promo and said, okay, you know, Max, I'd appreciate it if you would let me out of my contract. It's time for me to move on. You know, from that date, there were how many weeks, right? Double or Nothing is at the end of May. That was early March. So, you know, you have a good 9 weeks, 10 weeks to kill. What are you going to do? How many people can Wardlow go in there and squash every single week before it gets old? So they did this angle where MJF said, well, you know what? This guy's getting more over than me. The hell with that. I'm going to send him home and sit him on his ass and keep paying him to sit at home. People will forget about him. All this Wardlow momentum will die off. Let's bar him from the building. And so every week now, people are waiting and they're looking forward to seeing Wardlow. What's he going to do this week? Who's he going to beat up? Which part of the crowd is he going to come through? And he's just beating the hell out of everybody. And he's getting these huge reactions. So in the next few weeks, this ban is going to be lifted. And they're going to begin the process. How they're going to get there, I don't know. But they're going to begin the process of building to what has to be a singles match at the end of May, at the next pay-per-view. So they have found a genius way to actually not just keep this guy over, but get him more over. People are dying to see him get his hands on MJF. So I think it's genius what they have been doing with these two. We got a quick Darby Allin video where he challenged Andrade El Idolo to a coffin match, which is going to be taking place on Dynamite next Wednesday. We also got a new House of Black vignette with Malakai Black. There was no Buddy Matthews. There was no Brody King in this one. It was just Malakai off somewhere. And it was a very, as Jim Ross said, a very macabre, very dark vignette, where at one point he talked about what if his throat was ripped open? You would find razor blades. It's a Malakai Black promo, right? So there's a lot of, I'm sure there's a lot of symbolism in there. I don't necessarily get all of it, but the way these promos are shot, they look great. I just think that it's ridiculous. We don't get to see him on television in the ring as much as we should. And this was one of my fears when they formed an actual group around these guys in the House of Black, that now he's just a guy who does tag teams and trios matches. You know, Malakai Black is somebody who should be under consideration for their top title. He could be a top guy in this company. And I almost feel like now, A, because he's in a group, but B, because they've brought in so many people, he's taken a back seat to everybody else, and that was my biggest fear. My biggest fear is being realized. We're not getting enough Malakai Black on television. So that's something they need to correct. Speaking of trios, we had a six-man tag. It was the Jericho Appreciation Society against Eddie Kingston, Santana, and Ortiz. So at the beginning of the Jericho Appreciation Society entrance, they now have the loud one, Matt Menard, mimicking the old WWF signature that they used to have many years ago. Before Jericho's music plays, they have him come on, and he said, the Jericho Appreciation Society for over 5 weeks, the recognized symbol of excellence of sports entertainment. And then Judas plays, and out comes Jericho. And everybody sings along to the heels music, because Jericho has to have people singing to his music. Can't change it up. You got to keep Judas. Here's my question to you. We saw Cody Rhodes leave AEW and go to WWE. And Cody came back, but he came back with his full entrance, the same one that he had that he used in AEW. He had the rights to use the music. They have him coming up from the ground, even down to the soundbite at the beginning where he says, you know, wrestling has more than one royal family, right? The American Nightmare, the whole thing, right? And it got over huge, and it's great. And he comes across as a huge star relative to fucking Stardust the last time we saw him. Not even if. When Chris Jericho eventually does go back to WWE, because he will. They all do. They all eventually go back. When Chris Jericho eventually does return to WWE, does he return with Judas as his music? Because Judas is his song. I can't imagine he wouldn't have the rights to use it there because it's his fucking song. Do you think that Jericho uses Judas? And do you, if you are Vince McMahon or Chris Jericho, do you come back to WWE with Judas? I would think the answer is yes. Even now, you know, he's been using that music now for a few years. He'll be in AEW for a while yet, but you look 2, 3, 4 years down the road, when he goes back, I almost think he has to use Judas. He has to have the AEW entrance when he goes back. Wouldn't you think? Just a thought. So, representing the group in this match, Jake Hager, Jericho, Daniel Garcia. Eddie Kingston walked to the ring in a white tank top with the word thump on it. And already I saw all the people on Twitter, oh, is that some kind of a political state? You could tell who the longtime wrestling fans are and who the new fans are. I can't tell you how many people I got, you know, on my timeline saying, oh, wait a minute, is that a reference to this person or that person? No, it's a reference to the Junkyard Dog. The Junkyard Dog sold out many a show in New Orleans working for Bill Watson Mid-South Wrestling many, many, many years ago, over 30 years ago, almost 40 years ago. In that very city, the Junkyard Dog, the peak of his career was working for Bill Watson Mid-South Wrestling. And he was over like nobody you have ever seen. You hear people talk about the Von Erichs in Texas and Jerry Lawler in Memphis, right? Everybody kind of, you know, Dusty in Florida. That was, for a period of time, JYD in New Orleans, in Louisiana. And, of course, JYD used to come out, it would say thump. It would say thump on his tights. So that's what that reference was. It was nothing political. It was nothing from anything else. I like that little nod to JYD. And Jim Ross picked up on that right away, right? You talk about Mid-South, Bill Watts. Of course, Jim Ross perks up. That's where he cut his teeth, you know, working under Bill Watts in Mid-South. So I thought that was a nice nod there. Ortiz had Jeff Parker's sneakers that he had stolen from him on the tarmac. He had his sneakers tied around his neck. So they wrestle for a little bit. They go to an ad break. And after the ad, let me take a pause here. There are going to be a lot of fans who are probably around the same age that I am. When I was younger, I didn't grow up watching Mid-South Wrestling. I didn't have access to it. But even if I did, I doubt I would have been watching it. I was too young to be like, oh, I want to watch Mid-South Wrestling. So my first exposure to the Junkyard Dog, like a lot of people I see in the chat, was when he was, you know, working for Vince McMahon and he came up north to WWE. I didn't know from anything. I mean, when I was a kid, I had a Junkyard Dog poster on my wall. And I loved his theme song. Fucking fantastic song, Grab Them Cakes. I loved it. So I was a JYD fan, but I only knew of him from WWF. So it wasn't until many years later I saw some of the matches he had in Mid-South, and he was in much better physical shape. And he had some great matches there, and I was like, it's like a totally different person. What happened? And then he went to WCW there for a run. He had matches with Ric Flair. He was grossly overweight. He was awful. He was terrible. But if you saw him at his peak in Mid-South, you wouldn't say that he was terrible. You would recognize, holy shit, this guy's really good. But he let himself go as time went on. In WWF, it was more cartoony. He was more of a gimmick That's what everybody was. Everybody was a gimmick. Jim Duggan, when he went to go work for Vince, he was a gimmick. Oh, I mean, that was Jim Duggan. Jim Duggan in Mid-South is totally different from the Jim Duggan in WWE. Ted DiBiase in Mid-South, totally different from the Ted DiBiase in WWE, although he hit the lottery. As far as gimmicks go, DiBiase hit the lottery. Anyway, back to this match here. After an ad break, Santana hit the Three Amigos suplexes and then hit a frog splash for two. Ortiz tagged in, and he also went on the offensive here. Eddie Kingston took out Jake Hager with a suicide dive. Ortiz tossed Daniel Garcia into Jericho, and Santana landed a dive out on Hager. So here come Parker and Menard. Here come 2.0 down to the ring. Ortiz wiped them out with a dive. Kingston tagged in. He caught Daniel Garcia with an exploder. Garcia avoided the spinning back fist. Jericho hit Kingston, though, from behind with the baseball bat. The referee did not see it. And that allowed Daniel Garcia to cover Eddie Kingston for the win. After the match, Jericho and the heels beat down Kingston, Santana, and Ortiz. Jericho hit Santana with a Judas effect. And they all stood tall to end the segment. There was really nothing wrong with the match. I wrote here standard six-man stuff. It was standard. It was a basic, fine match. I'm not into this feud. I'm not sold on this. This doesn't really excite me. I do like seeing pissed off Eddie Kingston. When Eddie Kingston is pissed off for some reason and he's laser focused on somebody, Eddie Kingston is great. But as far as this feud, I'm not into this. Match itself, I thought was okay. Bushwhackers is another one. That's a great one. Somebody mentioned the Bushwhackers. Here's the thing about the Bushwhackers. Actually, here's the thing about a lot of these guys. I know that these guys will go to WWF and they'll end up with some kind of lame cartoonish gimmick and it's like, oh my God, what's happened to them? But they went there and they made a lot more money than they probably made when they were more serious working somewhere else. And that's why a lot of them ended up working there, frankly. So yeah, the Bushwhackers as the Sheep Herders, they were a scary team. I mean, they were a scary team as heels. And then they went to WWF, and of course, you know, they did. There's a super chat actually down below of me doing the fucking Bushwhacker. That's, again, I grew up on this shit. You know? Sometimes I wish I would have grown up watching World Class, or I would have grown up watching Mid-South. And some of that stuff. Or even the old NWA. You know, it wasn't until years later that I was able to go back and watch and appreciate all that stuff. Although I love the WWF too, don't get me wrong. But, you know, I didn't grow up on the Sheep Herders going around bleeding and murdering people. I grew up on the Bushwhackers going, yay, yay, and licking people, you know. I thought that was normal. Backstage, Alex Marvez was with MJF, who had his lawyer, Smart Mark Sterling, with him. And MJF was none too happy about what happened earlier with Wardlow. He said that he's got money, and money is what makes the world go round. He said he's going to put Wardlow, that greedy little pig, to work. And all of a sudden, Andrade's assistant, Jose, walked in, and MJF handed him an envelope, I presume, with a lot of money in it. And then into camera frame comes The Butcher. And MJF says that he's going to have to face The Butcher next week. And The Butcher shows up on screen and The Butcher lets out a scream. I guess that's what butchers do, right? They scream. Well, maybe if they cut themselves. They cut their thumb off. Remember Randy the Ram in The Wrestler? It's a dangerous job. Slicing meat all day. So The Butcher lets out this bellow. Like fucking Mantar. By the way, I'm sure Wardlow is shaking in his boots that he's going to be in the ring with a guy who never wins any of his matches. The Butcher, look, he looks like an intimidating guy. He looks like a guy who would fit right in a saloon in the Old West. But the Butcher never wins. So I don't know why he thinks Wardlow would be all that worried about this match next week. Up next, we had the low point of the show. We had, well, unless you count that ending. But we had the low point of the show. We had the Dynamite debut of Marina Shafir, who has been wrestling exclusively on Dark, and now I can see why, taking on Sky Blue. They showed Jade Cargill in the back. She was watching on a monitor with smart Mark Sterling. She was on her phone. She wasn't even paying attention to the match. She's going to be wrestling Shafir. Marina Shafir is being built up as the woman who could potentially take the TBS title from Jade. Jade is going for her 30th win very soon. They still haven't announced when the match is going to take place. So Sterling was, he was trying to, you know, they're trying to scout, and he's trying to get her to pay attention to what's going on. This match completely killed the crowd. Best thing I could say about it is that it was over quick. Shafir took Sky Blue down with a judo throw. Blue tried for a DDT. Shafir, though, turned it into a bear hug, planted her. Blue fought back. Shafir shrugged everything off, though, hit an overhead throw. She applied a triangle for the win, and that was it. A little over 2 minutes. Short, not too painful, but Shafir was, she's very limited in what she can do. Just based on what I saw here and what I remember of her from what little screen time she had in the ring in NXT. And they didn't give her and Jessamine Duke a whole lot of ring time on television in NXT, but they gave them some. And I was never overly impressed by, you know, what I saw from them. But they were a work in progress. I assumed, all right, they'll keep them down there for a while and they'll improve. They'll get better. And then Jessamine Duke, I guess, just decided she didn't want to wrestle anymore. She was more interested in gaming on her Twitch channel, I guess. And Shafir kind of disappeared. And then I saw that she wound up in AEW. And then I didn't think anything of it because we haven't seen her on television. She's been exclusively on Dark. So what little I've seen of her in NXT, what little I've seen of her here, has not been overly impressive. And this was not good. And she cannot be the person to defeat Jade Cargill. I can understand them building her up. She's got that MMA background. Oh boy, you know, she's going to give Jade Cargill the toughest challenge yet that she's had in her career. She cannot be the one to beat Jade Cargill. She's not beating Jade Cargill. Not that I thought there was much of a chance before I saw this match, but after I saw this match, no, she is not the woman to beat Jade Cargill. We went to the back with Lexi Nair, about to interview Hook. How many hookers do we have in the chat tonight? Where has Paige Van Zandt been? That is actually a great question. Paige Van Zandt did sign with AEW. She is officially in AEW, but she's also signed to do more bare knuckle fights. And I think she actually has a fight coming up. So even though she just signed, I think she might already be training for her next fight. So that's probably why you haven't seen her. We went to the back. Lexi Nair was going to interview Hook. Hook is wrestling on Dynamite for the first time. Ah, there they are. There's all the hookers in the chat. I knew they were here. He's wrestling on Dynamite for the first time. Right now, he's been exclusively on Rampage, not on Dynamite. So he'll be on the show next week. They were immediately interrupted before he could say a word. They were immediately interrupted by Tony Nese and his new representative, Smart Mark Sterling. This was Mark Sterling's third straight appearance on this show. Three consecutive segments. The segment with MJF, the segment with Marina Shafir, he was in the back with Jade Cargill, and now this segment here in the back with Tony Nese. This guy gets around. Talk about ambulance chaser. This guy gets around on this show. Nese said that he resents Hook. Hook stood up. Heels walked away. Really is all there was to it. All of a sudden, Danhausen randomly shows up. There's Danhausen, who's behind Hook. It's almost like Hook doesn't even know he's there. Danhausen is once again attempting to put the Danhausen curse on Hook to no avail. Hook was unfazed, and he just picked up a medicine ball that happened to be there, and he chucked it behind him, and I think it hit Danhausen, and that was the entire segment. This was very dumb. This was very dumb. And as I said last week, one of two things is going to happen here. Either he's going to murder Danhausen, which would be my preferred option, or he, in some weird, bizarre way, is going to grow to have some level of affection for him. It's almost like if you find this injured, wounded pet, and you nurse it back to health, and anybody who tries... Thank you, D'Arlo. I almost missed the Bully the Clown. Bully the Clown is going to be on the Broken Skull Sessions on Friday. I can't wait not to watch. But, as I was saying, it would almost be like having this wounded little pet, and you nurse it back to health, and now you're very defensive of it. You'll do anything to protect it. That's the other way this could go, where Hook, for whatever reason, has some sort of affinity to Danhausen, doesn't like him necessarily, he's not going to be tag team partners with him, but anybody who tries to fuck with Danhausen, Hook goes and just completely messes them up. One of two ways is how this should go. I've already told you the way that I hope it goes. So after the break, Dan Lambert was in the back with Ethan Page and the TNT champion, Scorpio Sky. The point of this is that Scorpio Sky is going to defend his TNT title against Sammy Guevara, or as his theme music says, Sammy Guevara. He's going to defend it against Sammy Guevara at Battle of the Belts on Saturday. We had absolute Ricky Starks, New Orleans' own Ricky Starks, out to a big reaction in his hometown. I think this was his first time, actually, for AEW wrestling in his hometown. Teaming up with Powerhouse Hobbs to take on Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland. Starks, as you would imagine, the hometown kid. He was over like crazy here on the show. Keith Lee sent both Hobbs and Starks to the outside. Swerve launched himself off of Lee's chest. Took out Team Taz with a moonsault. That was ahead of the commercial break. Shout out to No Cap. Channel member for 3 months. Why does AEW have so many goofy characters? Danhausen, Orange Cassidy. Well, you name two of them. Says WWE is guilty of the same, but damn, it is cringy. Every show has it. You just said it yourself. WWE has it. Ring of Honor has had it before. I mean, you know, as long as you don't go overboard with them. You know, the thing with WWE that annoys me is a lot of the 24/7 stuff they do, just because it's so played out. But they've done that for years, and AEW is no different. You just hope they don't go overboard with it and have half the roster doing goofy shit. So anyway, they went to a commercial break. During the break, Team Taz, they got control back. There was a drop kick by Swerve that allowed the babyfaces to regain control. Team Taz tried to cut off Lee's offensive run. Keith Lee hit a great leapfrog, and then he beeled Ricky Starks into his own partner. It was a combo discus forearm from Keith Lee and Swerve that got a near fall. Ricky Starks countered a rolling cutter into a spear, hit a flipping DDT for a good near fall. Swerve tossed Starks into a pounce by Keith Lee. They were trying something new here. I don't know if it really worked. I don't know if it had the effect that they were hoping for, but that was kind of an interesting little bit of offense that they tried. Lee and Hobbs got in each other's face, and that's where things started to get good. You could see the crowd kind of came alive for it when they were the referees trying to get between them. I forgot. I think one of them wasn't legal. But when Lee and Hobbs wanted to go at it, people... Yeah, you could hear the reaction from the crowd. People were ready for it. Starks used the distraction to hit an enziguri. Keith Lee countered the Rochambeau as Taz was shown walking down to the ring. Very unusual. Taz is not usually a manager. He has a team, Team Taz, but he doesn't actually manage. We don't usually see him get physically involved, so this was interesting, seeing him come down to the ring. Taz walked to the ring. Hobbs broke up a doomsday device, but he got sent into the ring post. So Lee perched Ricky Starks up on the top rope. And he came back with a diving spear. Starks covered, but was hit with a 450 splash from Swerve. As Ricky Starks was trying to win, here comes Swerve with the 450 right across his back. Taz then tripped up Keith Lee by the ropes. That allowed Powerhouse Hobbs to lift up Keith Lee and hit that spine buster and get the 1-2-3. So Powerhouse Hobbs picks up a much needed win here for his team. The only thing that surprised me about this is that they didn't give the win to Ricky Starks, but they're heels. So, you know, you don't necessarily want to just give the fans, you know, what they want in that situation, because these two are supposed to be the heels here in this match. But I thought this was a much needed win for Team Taz, who seem to lose far more than they win, except Hook. Hook is undefeated. So Taz got in the ring after and celebrated with his men, and Ricky was soaking up all the cheers, and it was great. It was great to see Ricky have his moment in front of his people. You could see how much it meant to him. And I thought this was a great match. I thought this was one of the best matches of the night. Vicky Guerrero and Nyla Rose showed up to interrupt a Thunder Rosa interview in the back, and they had a cake. Gee, I wonder if that cake will actually be eaten by anybody. I wonder. They show up with a cake to celebrate what they said was Thunder Rosa having the shortest run ever as the AEW Women's Champion. And Rosa saw the cake and she said she's not stupid. And she knocked the cake back into Nyla's face. Nyla then had cake shit all over her face and was partially blinded. She went to go throw a shot. She hit Vicky by accident. And then Nyla and Thunder Rosa brawled around for a little bit until they were separated. And that was the final bit of promotion before their big women's title match on Saturday. I cannot wait for Thunder Rosa to pick up the win and move on to something else. Speaking of moving on, it was time to move on to the main event. It was time. First time ever. Samoa Joe, in only his second in-ring appearance in AEW, going one-on-one with Murder Grandpa himself, Minoru Suzuki, for Suzuki's Ring of Honor Television Championship. Once again, they had Bobby Cruz doing the ring introductions because it was an ROH title match. I suspect that we'll have him back on Battle of the Belts on Saturday, because I'm going to run down the card in a minute. And there's a big ROH title match on the show on Saturday. So I suspect they'll have him doing the announcements for that as well. They showed Jay Lethal and Sanjay Dutt. They were sitting in the front row, so you knew they were going to get involved at some point, because they made the promise to Joe last week. Hey, we're going to have a gift. We're going to have a surprise for you. So you knew at some point they were going to get involved. So Joe came out first, followed by the champion, as it should be. That doesn't happen enough these days. It annoys me when the champion comes out first. So Suzuki comes out last. We got the full Kaza Ninare entrance, and the crowd sang along. Oh, it's always fun. Always fun to see. So we got a chop fest. Yeah, by the way, you know, James mentions, James, it's funny you mentioned that. I hadn't even thought about that, but I do wonder, you know, Toni Storm was on this show. She was in the back. And I do wonder if maybe she, at some point, as she was walking the halls, as Vicky and Nyla were walking to go, you know, interrupt Thunder Rosa's segment, I could just picture Toni turning and looking over and seeing a cake. Seeing, it's not a pie necessarily, but still seeing something with frosting on it and having these like flashbacks, like she was in fucking Nam or something. These fucking, you know, like war flashbacks, running as far away as she possibly could. She might still be hiding out in a fucking broom closet somewhere. This poor girl. Still traumatized by the experience. So we got a chop fest to start between these two men. Suzuki was laughing at him every time Joe chopped him. He just laughed and he stuck his tongue out at him. Joe was frustrated. Joe's chest, he looked like he was badly sunburned at the end of it. He looked like he was laying on the beach, fell asleep, woke up 3 hours later, didn't put any suntan lotion on, and said, shit. That's what he looked like by the time this was over here. Suzuki's chest was red too, but it was only marginally, he was only marginally doing better than Joe was. This is where I started to get Joe and Kobashi vibes. The first 3 or 4 straight minutes of this match was nothing but knife-edge chops. But the people were into it. You know, they were testing each other. They were testing each other's pain threshold. And so we got all these chops. And I was digging this. I don't always, you know, I do think that the chops are something that they tend to go overboard with sometimes. But in this situation, I just think it worked. The sweat was flying. So this went on for a while. Eventually, Joe got the first knockdown. Suzuki, though, got Joe's arm trapped in the ropes and tried to tear the thing off as they headed into the final ad break. When they came back, Joe had Suzuki in a crossface. Suzuki got out of it. T's going for the gotch, but had second thoughts. And he let Joe go, and instead he says, "One more time." Here we go again, with the chop battle between these two men back and forth. Suzuki got a sleeper hold. Joe fell backwards, though. He just fell all the way backwards and landed with all of his weight. He crushed this man. Because Joe is a big man. So both men made it back up to their feet. And Suzuki caught Joe with a drop kick, then reapplied the sleeper for about 10 seconds, and then let go. And he tried for the gotch-style pile driver, but he could not get Samoa Joe up. Samoa Joe was simply too big. Joe then perched Suzuki up on the top rope. And he went to grab him for the muscle buster. Suzuki, though, tried for another armbar on the ropes. Joe avoided it. And this time, he got him in position for the muscle buster. He delivered the muscle buster. And he went for the pin. And he got the 1, 2, 3. And Samoa Joe is your new Ring of Honor television champion for the very first time. And in only his second match in AEW, Samoa Joe now has championship gold. And it's not even an AEW title. The Ring of Honor TV title, which he has never held before. There's something about Samoa Joe winning a Ring of Honor title. It's not the world title, but winning a Ring of Honor championship and holding another Ring of Honor championship for the first time in, it's got to be, 15 years? That I thought was very cool. And they're using, these old school Ring of Honor, the old ROH logo design. So I thought it was very cool. And I enjoyed this match. This match pretty much went the way that I thought it would. I enjoyed the Suzuki-Bryan Danielson. That was a much better match. But, whenever we get little doses of Suzuki in AEW, especially when the crowd is really into it, they know who he is, they like the style, it just makes for a fun atmosphere. So I said Jay Lethal was out there with Sanjay Dutt in the front row. And they interrupt Joe's victory celebration. They're standing outside the ring by the entranceway. And they have a gift box. They have they came bearing presents, like Santa Claus, here for Samoa Joe. They pull the lid off, and underneath the lid, it was Jay Lethal's middle finger. So that was the whole point. He flips off Samoa Joe. All of a sudden, the lights go out. Now we have no idea why. We have no idea if, there's going to be somebody in the ring, if the lights are going to come back on and Joe's just going to be missing. He's going to be gone. We don't know. The lights come back on, and standing in the ring behind Samoa Joe is this giant man who apparently is a legitimate 7'3". Okay, so we talk about Omos on Raw. Omos is a big dude, right? He sucks in the ring. He's boring to watch, but the man is massive. That's why they signed him. Because if you see this guy walking on the streets, if you see this guy walking through baggage claim, you're going to stop and go, "Holy shit, that's a big man." That's the whole point. And Omos, I think, is a legit 7'2 or 7'3, right? So the guy is huge. And he's standing there, and they identify him as Satnam Singh. They said he's the first native of India ever to be drafted to the NBA. And again, this is the guy, he started training to become a wrestler. AEW signed him officially in September of last year. He's been training, I don't know where he's been training, but he's been training for a few months at least. He attacks Samoa Joe. He glides like a gazelle across the ring. He attacks Samoa Joe, and he puts Joe in the old Great Khali vice grip. And he's squeezing his head, and Joe is going out just long enough for Jay Lethal then to hit the lethal injection and drop Samoa Joe. And I just wrote in my notes, they killed this show by giving us the Great Khali 2.0. They didn't kill the show in that it ruined the entire show, but boy, that ending was no good. That ending was no good. Now, I have not seen this guy wrestle. I have not heard this man speak. I don't even know if he knows English. He may speak fluent English. Okay, I have no idea. Can he cut a promo? I don't know. We're going to see. Going to give him a chance and we'll see. But I looked at him as he's lumbering around in the ring, and it just reminded me of what we've seen WWE try so many times before. And they did it with Kali, and they've done it with other big guys. I mentioned Omos. You know, they put Sangha right now in NXT, to use a current example. Sangha is the bodyguard for Grayson Waller in NXT. So they have these bigger guys. I mean, Sang is not 7 feet tall. I mean, compared to the people they have in NXT, he looks like a fucking 8-foot giant. But, you know, they have these bigger guys, and, you know, it's fine for the visual effect, but what can they do? Are they entertaining to watch? Again, can they speak? Can they work a basic match? Maybe he doesn't work a match. Maybe he's just there to be the muscle. Maybe he's there to be a bodyguard. In that case, that's a relatively, you know, inoffensive role. Fine. I can't say that I have any desire to see this man in the ring doing tree slams and the stuff that I'm used to seeing these big guys doing in WWE, because it's not exciting there either. This looked and felt to me like too much of a WWE ending to a show. I think that's what bothered me about it. Right down to the vice grip. That's why I thought of the Great Khali. Not just because he's big. I go back to that basketball segment. I don't know why that segment, after all these years, it still sticks out to me, but it made me think of Batista and the basketballs from all those years ago. Anyway, this ending was no good, but I did enjoy seeing Samoa Joe win the Ring of Honor TV title, because again, the expectation is that Joe will be wrestling not only in AEW, but he'll be wrestling in Ring of Honor as well. As he should. Because Ring of Honor is going to need some big names at the top of the card. And Samoa Joe, the longest reigning Ring of Honor world champion of all time, Ring of Honor Hall of Famer, part of this year's inaugural class and their first Hall of Fame. If anybody is going to be part of this relaunch of Ring of Honor and try to give it some oomph and try to give it some name, you know, power at the top of the card, it's Samoa Joe. Now, Friday night on Rampage. Hangman Page on Rampage defends the AEW World title. It is a live show on Friday night. Be aware that the show airs 3 hours earlier than usual. This is a 7 p.m. Eastern start for Rampage on Friday. So instead of airing after SmackDown, it is airing before. So it is going to be airing before SmackDown. Hangman defends the AEW World title against Adam Cole in a Texas death match, the second Texas death match title defense that we have seen from Hangman in 2 months. First one was against Lance Archer a couple months ago, and that was a great match. And so you put Adam Cole in the ring with Hangman, I expect this to be nothing less than great. We have the Blackpool Combat Club taking on the Gun Club, and in an Owen Hart tournament qualifier, Ruby Soho takes on Robin Renegade. Holy shit, she's alive. I had completely forgotten about her. I totally forgot that Ruby Riott was even signed to AEW. I guess she's been hanging around on Dark. Epsilon Sama says that Satnam Singh has a documentary on Netflix if you would like to know more about him. I might have to check that out. It's called One in a Billion. Well, I would like to know more about the guy. You know, whether or not he's good on television or not, I would at least like to know more about his background. So I will certainly look into that. But yes, Ruby was banished to YouTube, and now she's being dusted off for Rampage on. So at least we know that she'll very likely end up having a spot in the Owen Hart Cup. So then Saturday night, 8 p.m., is a taped Battle of the Belts 2. They're taping it on Friday night after Rampage. Battle of the Belts 2 on TNT. Scorpio Sky defends the TNT Championship against Sammy Guevara. Jonathan Gresham defends the Ring of Honor World Championship against the former champion Dalton Castle. And Thunder Rosa will defend the AEW Women's title against Nyla Rose. So that is the lineup for the show on Saturday night. Then next Wednesday on Dynamite, Wardlow takes on The Butcher. Hook makes his Dynamite debut. in the ring. Britt Baker returns to take on Danielle Camella in an Owen Hart Cup match. Jungle Boy will take on Kyle O'Reilly in an Owen Hart Cup match. Darby Allin takes on Andrade El Idolo in a coffin match. And if you can believe it, this is going to shock the world. I know you're going to be completely shocked when I tell you guys this. Tony Khan, Tony Rise of the Bots Khan, is promising a huge announcement. It has happened again. They put the graphic up on the screen. Tony Khan promises a huge announcement on Dynamite next week. It's like a running joke at this point. It is like a running joke. Not even saying that some of his announcements haven't been pretty big. How many announcements can you promise from one person? So now the question is, what's the next big surprise going to be? I would think the consensus probably would be, if it's a talent signing, probably Cesaro. Claudio, who I think Tony Khan should sign to be one of the faces of Ring of Honor. He should have a deal like Samoa Joe, where he splits his time between both promotions, but he spends most of his time trying to help build up and be the face of ROH. Because the one thing Claudio did not do when he was in Ring of Honor, he was never a Ring of Honor world champion. He was never a world champion in WWE either. He could be a champion this time in Ring of Honor, while also making appearances in AEW or going back and forth. So if we're talking about talent, he would be somebody who I think that Tony Khan could definitely get use out of going back and forth between both companies. But look, there's still a lot of free agent talent out there. I mean, you know, we are reaching the point, though, where they have a lot of talent that is simply not getting airtime that they should be getting on the main shows. And I mentioned Malakai Black earlier. It's very frustrating. I am a fan of Malakai Black. I like the whole act and look and everything, and he's very good. And there's just not enough time. You know, we're not getting to see these people as frequently as we should. You can't really establish some of these people if they're not consistently appearing on television. But he's got two promotions now, so he can sign more talent. And again, you can split their time between ROH and AEW. I think Claudio should be the guy. But we don't know. We don't know if it's a talent announcement, if he's going to announce some kind of a major event. You know, WWE this week made it official, their big UK stadium show that's been rumored for months. Tony Khan has made no bones about the fact that he wants to bring an AEW show in the near future to the UK. He wants to go to Craven Cottage. Who knows? Maybe it's something along the... I think that would be kind of disappointing to make that your TV announcement. I mean, that's something he can announce on social media. So we'll see. But yet another Tony Khan huge announcement. I mean, clearly he's relying on that as a gimmick. And it's worked on occasion in the past as far as helping to pop a number because of the interest. So he's going back to the well again. It's the only reason why the constant hyping of the major announcements on TV. Because in his mind, he thinks it will help drum up interest in the show, get people talking, and they'll tune in to see what the big announcement is. We'll see. You know, we'll see if it works. TK now owns Impact, apparently. Maybe he's going to announce that he's bought Impact. He's just going to keep buying companies until we just have Vince McMahon and Tony Khan, and that's it. They're just going to... It's like we see the consolidation of all these media companies. These big conglomerates are just pretty much owning everything now. It's going to end up being that way in wrestling. Either Vince McMahon owns you or Tony Khan owns you. There's not going to be anybody else. You either work for one or you work for the other. Maybe that's going to be the announcement. Tony Khan, but control your narrative. I don't think he would buy it if it was offered to him for free. I think if they paid Tony Khan to take over, control your narrative, I don't think he would want to have anything to do with it. I don't blame him. Anyway, so those are your cards coming up. Let's take a look at the Twitter poll. I put thumbs in the middle as an option this time because, again, this was a show where there was a lot of really good stuff, and then there was some stuff that didn't connect quite the way maybe that they had hoped. And it's kind of reflected here in these poll results. 63% thumbs up, 21% thumbs in the middle, and 15% thumbs down. So with that option in there, that's probably the worst thumbs up rating that this show has gotten in quite some time. But still, overwhelmingly positive, 63.7. I thought overall it was a very enjoyable show for the most part. It was a very enjoyable show. And I am very happy to have these shows as opposed to not having them. Let's make that clear. We are a lot better off having these shows than not having them at all. That's why I can never understand the hate from the people who just want the company to go belly up. Never made any sense to me. Those are not real wrestling fans. You want to see a promotion die. I don't know how you can call yourself a wrestling fan. You don't have to like it. You don't have to watch it. But the way some people go overboard, it's pathetic. Really, that's what it is. But I'll tell you what isn't pathetic. This right here. I am not going to be live on Friday night. Usually I would be live. Covering SmackDown for you. SmackDown, and we have a live Rampage on Friday. No live stream on Friday, though. I'm going to be doing commentary for House of Glory, and if you want, you can tune in. It's going to be live on Fight TV. We are live this month on Fight TV this Friday night, 8 p.m. Eastern. That is the ordering page up on Fight.tv right now. House of Glory Tribulations. We got the Briscoes, Jay and Mark, defending their House of Glory tag team titles against Jeff Cobb and TJP. Hey, all you Impact fans, Tasha Steelz, she's the new Impact Knockouts champion. She's answering the open challenge. She's coming in to challenge Natalia Markova for her House of Glory Women's Championship. Low-key going to be defending his crown jewel title. The Amazing Red is back. He's been gone for a few months due to injury. It's going to be good to have him back. So I will be at the NYC Arena covering that show. So again, no live review on Friday, and no live review on Saturday for Battle of the Belts. I'll cover everything on the podcast on Sunday. That'll be episode 752. Also, for those of you who may have missed it, I was fucked by Shawn Michaels. Not in that way, but I was screwed by Shawn Michaels in the latest edition of Sound Off Gamer. The latest My Rise episode, I posted it the other day, almost an hour long. I did not have a very good second day at the WWE Performance Center, and it's because of that guy right there, that little hobo-looking guy there in his little hat. Shawn Michaels screwed me over at the very end there. So anyway, if you want to check out the latest Sound of Gamer, it is up right now for your viewing pleasure. There will be more of them to come. I will get my revenge. This will not be the last that Shawn Michaels hears from the Solomon Monster. Me and so many others. Yeah, I'm well aware. I am not the first person to... I am not the first person to get screwed by Shawn Michaels. Yeah, the glitch. See if you spot the glitch, by the way. I encountered my first 2K glitch playing the game. It's in the latest installment, so you guys can go check it out and see if you can pick up where the glitch took place. Pretty obvious. Alrighty. Let's see. What do we got? What do we got? Huh? What do we got? What do we got from you guys? What do we got from you guys? We got Super Chats. Hey, Sky. What's going on, Sky? With the $9.99, I'm going to Defy Wrestling to see John Moxley against Tom Lawler on April 30th. This card is so stacked. So that's very cool. Yeah, you mentioned that last time. You'll have to let me know how that is. Moxley against Tom Lawler. Is that the first time those two were in the ring together? I believe it is. Hey, the Coug, Shawn Michaels isn't in Texas anymore. He's in Orlando. I'd have to fly down to Florida. I'm not going down to Florida. Too many crazy people on the roads there in Florida. They don't know how to drive. You know how I know that? Because they all came from New York. Matthew Dinkins with the 999. Not thrilled with the idea of Jamie Hayter and Tony Storm facing in the first round. I don't think it's going to hurt Hayter getting beaten in the long run, but why not showcase both in a semifinal match? That was the point I made earlier. Nayef Al-Safar dropping a couple of super chats. What's going on, Nayef? You're having a good night. Food Hive. Nyla Rose said, I love cake and violence. I died. Well, who among us doesn't like cake and violence? I myself love cake and violence. Speaking of which, I did mention Tony Storm to win that Owen Hart. Well, again, I don't know all the participants in the tournament, but Tony Storm has got to be, until I know everybody, Tony Storm has got to be at the top of my list. Gordon Smith, 24. Joe still got it. Also, Suzuki is having an FTR week since he and Ishii still need to beat the shit out of each other on Saturday. That's true. That is true. I imagine that Suzuki dropped the belt because he's probably on his way back to Japan, maybe next week. That's probably why he's no longer the ROH TV champion. Old Dirty Sausage. By the way, that's one of the reasons why I love watching Dynamite so much. You know, you'll have weeks where it's great, you'll have weeks where it's not so great, but it's still good. But without AEW, we don't get matches like Joe and Suzuki. What other company is going to give you Samoa Joe against Minoru Suzuki on TV? None. There is no other company. So, you know, you want matches like this. I'm grateful that, you know, Tony Khan is able to put matches like this together and put it on a major network like a TBS or a TNT. But Old Dirty Sausage says, this could have been one of the best Dynamites ever, but then the ending. Yes, the not-so-great Kali was quite the come-down there at the end of the show. I am Crush. $10 super chat. Absolutely love Dynamite tonight. Sad Marina did not get the pop they thought she would, and bad main event angle post-match, but still solid. Punk doing that flip spot off the rope. Pop me. Love AEW. Speaking of, somebody mentioned Veer. There he is. There he is. I have come, says Veer. No cap. I mean, if you're not Tony Khan, then you shouldn't really be too concerned about whether or not these matches draw. They only do them every now and then. If they were doing them every week, I would say, well, let's take a look and see if they draw. But we'll see, because we haven't seen... I mean, is this the first Suzuki main event that they've done on Dynamite? Or did they do him and Moxley in the main event? Because I know the match with Danielson was on YouTube. So I don't recall, but... You know, in situations like this, when they have a special match like this, I don't concern myself with whether or not, oh, did the match draw? My concern is, did the match kick ass or not? Did the match deliver? That's my concern. Tony Khan is the one who needs to be concerned about whether that main event tonight drew. Honestly, I don't give a shit. I'm just glad we got it. That's not my concern. I don't run the company. So in situations like this, I can excuse myself for a second and just enjoy it for what it is. Let's see. Nick Grosso. Good match with Joe and Suzuki, but the ending was underwhelming with Great Khali 2.0 showing up with the lights out treatment. Well, I got Tundar telling me that Suzuki and Mox was a main event, and then I have Mr. Dynamite saying that it was Suzuki's first time main eventing a Dynamite. So I have conflicting messages here in the chat. Are you sure that wasn't a Rampage that Suzuki headlined previously? B. Vincent 86 with the $30 Bully the Clown super chat. Says that WWE ending was terrible tonight. Magician Sapphire, man, what a way to kill the vibes of a mostly great show with the debut of Great Khali 2, Electric Boogaloo. Yeah, I don't know why they thought that would be a good way to go off the air. I don't know what they were thinking. You know, Tony Khan is usually good about knowing his audience, and he had to know that ending the show that way with that was not exactly going to be a crowd-pleasing way to close out the show. You could have just as easily had the big guy debut next week in the opening segment, in the middle of the show, promo segment, he comes out, beats up Joe. David Scott, Solomonster, until the overrun, I would have taken Tony to your favorite Chinese place in New York to celebrate a great show, but the ending, what the fuck? Yeah, I know. Just Jack, $10 super chat. I'm really enjoying your 2K22 My Rise videos. Get an Xbox controller so the buttons would line up with what the screen says. Now, I got the PS5. I didn't have to pay for the PS5. The best controller is the one that you don't have to pay for. So I'm learning slowly but surely. Again, the controls are a little confusing because of it, but I'm learning slowly but surely. I'm learning on the job. Anti-M Bishop, $10 super chat. What's happening, Solomonster? I don't know. You tell me what's happening. I'll be brief. Then proceeds to write a paragraph. It was Mid-South 83, good, and ended up Crockett 87, bad. This gave me ROH at the Garden vibes at the end of the show. Hashtag ECW barely legal 25 years. Peace out. I like that analogy. Mid-South 83, good. Crockett 87, bad. Although there's a lot of people these days that would kill to go back and have some Crockett from 87. Didn't Ronnie Garvin, was that the year Ronnie Garvin beat Flair for the title? Was it 87? I think it was. Frank Aquilino, I know it's just business, but is it disrespectful of Tony Khan to bring in Suzuki just to continuously lose? I mean, he put the Ring of Honor television title on him, so how is he being disrespectful of it? Tony Khan booked him to win the championship. Suzuki is probably going back to Japan, and he probably needed the title off of him. You know, Suzuki freelances himself. Suzuki books his own shots, so he didn't want to do it. He could have said no. So no, I don't think it's disrespectful at all. Rodimus Prime with the $40 super chat drop. How did I miss that? Look at this guy. Joe against Suzuki was amazing. Whack ending to the show. Overall, a great show. Andre Israel, please tell me you made a Security Geeks super chat. Should I? I have not yet. Should I make a Security Geeks super chat, or should I add the Security Geeks to be the booker? Quintus Brown, to be fair, that was an ROH storyline, not AEW. It's all a matter of semantics. So Quintus is trying to give Tony Khan and AEW a little out there by saying that that storyline was not an AEW storyline. It was a Ring of Honor storyline, and that may well be true, but it was on an AEW show. So you are incorrect. Wait, these are good ideas. I hadn't thought about putting WWE bot. Adding a WWE bot to the Be the Booker. Yes. I should give that some consideration. So where are we? We're 266 likes. We had over 1,000 people here before. You could do better than that. Hit that like button. Let's get those likes up. We should get out of here with no less than 300 by the time I'm done here. Marcus Robinson Johnson, while you're at Hog on Friday, I'll be at Rampage in the Battle of the Belts taping. Stay safe and enjoy your night on Friday. And you as well. Enjoy the show. You've got You got a lot of big matches at that taping on Friday, so you should have a pretty good night there. Samoan Fed 101, if you are the same age as TK, why aren't you rich? Why am I not rich? What kind of question is this? If I am the same age as Tony Khan, why am I not rich? And you could ask that question of fucking 92% of the United States. What kind of question is that? How do you know whether or not I'm rich? I could be the richest man in the world. You would never know. Drew Johnson. CM Punk wrestles Penta on TV. Cody wrestles The Miz. LMFAO. AEW for life. Bebe. Quintus Brown with the $2 super chat. I like all... That is true, actually. Everybody in the chat had a better answer than I did. I don't exactly have a billionaire father either. So that probably is part of the reason why I don't quite have the same bank account that Tony Khan does. Quintus Brown, AEW are undefeated in hot opening matches. They do have a lot of very hot openers, I will say that. D'Arlo Renford, I thought for a second that we were going to get Malachi Black, but we got Great Khali Ripoff, and I also thought it was Kurgan from The Oddities. You know what? I hadn't even thought about that being Malachi Black. That would have been a great spot for Malachi to pop up. You start a Malachi Joe feud? That's what I mean. We got to get Malachi back on team. Tundar says, where has Professor John Gotti been? Did he get whacked? I'm a little concerned that the professor may indeed have gotten whacked. We haven't heard from him in a while. Bret Hart. My dad suddenly passed away on Sunday. Oh my God, I'm sorry. And I buried him yesterday. I feel so glad of having wrestling in the Solo Monster as an escape. Thank you, Solo Monster, for always keeping me entertained. Well, Bret Hart, I'm very sorry to hear that. That's awful. And there's not really, I mean, it's still fresh, obviously. There's not really much else I can say from experience other than just hang in there. And obviously, you well know here joining us here tonight that you got a lot of people here who are friends to you. I'm glad that this can be, even if just for a few hours, a little escape for you. So, again, my condolences to you. Drew Johnson. Cody beat The Miz this week. His father would be proud. LOL. How embarrassing. Maybe next week Cody can fight Happy Corbin. WWE sucks, says Drew Johnson. Well, you do realize that Miz was somebody who Cody could go in there and beat. I mean, who else would you have Cody wrestling? He's going to have a rematch with Seth Rollins in a few weeks. He's not getting Roman Reigns anytime soon. AJ Styles is occupied with Edge. Finn Balor is going to probably lose his title to, well, Don't Call Me Austin Theory on Monday. Who else would you like to see Cody in the ring with here on day, you know, week two, week three, week four? If not people like The Miz. Who would you like to see him in the ring with? I would love to know. Dick the Cock. Why am I sitting here defending WWE? Look what you're making me do. Dick the Cock Johnson. $1.99 super chat. Need TK to book Satnam Singh against Jonathan Gresham. Oh, I'm sure that'll make people really happy. Matthew Sun, $8 super chat. Does Wardlow beat MJF in the eventual match to get free? I think he has to. I think he has to. If it were me, you know, again, I still think the you've heard me book this out, so you know where my thought is as far as the championship, where it goes next, where it ends up with MJF eventually. MJF can lose to Wardlow and still build himself back up and challenge for the title. So I think that Wardlow should get that win. He should break free. And then, you know, MJF one loss. You know, he'll survive it. He'll come back from it. Although it is back-to-back losses. Because he did lose to Punk at Revolution. But I just feel like as I sit here now, we'll see how I feel next month when we get closer to the pay-per-view if I change my mind. But I feel like it's going to be a Wardlow win. You could have, you know, MJF just completely screw this guy over. Spears gets involved. It builds to a rematch between the two of them. But as I sit here right now, I'm thinking Wardlow. Shawnee in the wrestling, or wrestling, I should say. We all know when Jericho goes back to the Fed, he'll be coming out to the King of My World. Love you. You got me through a tough week. Well, I appreciate that. I'm glad that I was able to help out. I don't know. I feel like Jericho goes back, he should come out to Judas. D'Arlo Renford with the $30 Fuck Bully Ray, Bully the Clown Super Chat. Is this a hot take, but do you think Eddie Kingston is like Mick Foley? Is very relatable in his look and promos. Besides, and are you go to watch Bully the Clown on the Broken Skull sessions? I don't, probably not, but I'm not going to be around on Friday when it drops, so I don't know when I'm going to watch it. Yeah, I mean, Eddie Kingston has a Foley-esque quality to him in that, you know, he isn't this physically, you know, appealing bodybuilding type. He doesn't have big muscles or anything like that. He's got this realness to him. He can cut a promo in a way that he's able to connect with an audience in a way that not everybody is able to. I mean, he's got some Mick Foley-esque qualities to him. I think that's a fair statement to make. But he isn't Mick Foley. He's got some of his qualities. Austin Runge, do you see or did you see the Young Rock segment? Boy, I can't even talk. Did you see the Young Rock segment teasing the WrestleMania 39 main event? I did. And it doesn't mean anything. Who knows how long ago that was even filmed? WWE would love to have The Rock at WrestleMania next year. It will. I've always said this. It will come down to The Rock's schedule. If he can do it, he will. If he's busy, he won't. It's as simple as that. It is as simple as that. And I'll tell you something else. If they thought they could get Rock for WrestleMania next year, if he was locked in, right? If Rock was locked, he would have been at the end of WrestleMania 38 this year, teasing a showdown with Roman Reigns. The fact that he wasn't tells me that they don't have him locked in. And they're not going to put him out there, even if they could have had him, because they're not sure if they're going to have him next year. So they could tease whatever they want on Young Rock, but that does not mean that it's going to for sure be Rock at Roman or WrestleMania next year. The Rock is, I mean, this guy is spread so thin. He's got his Terra Mana. He's running the XFL, which now might get sued, I saw, for some kind of logo infringement. He's got all the movies. He's got a TV show. I mean, you can't rely on the fact that this guy is going to be able to commit to WrestleMania next year. But is that the match they want? Of course. Now that Roman and Brock is over, the next biggest possible match WWE could do is Rock and Roman. So, of course, they're going to want that as their main event for next year. Rock's a busy guy. And he's I think he's taking on some other new project that he's launching. I didn't see what it was. I think he's making some kind of announcement soon. I mean, this guy's doing so many different things. WWE is not at the top of his list. Shin Akuma, what's going on? $10 super chat. Hello, Shin. Also dropped the PayPal for the podcast last week. Rizzo with the $20 super chat. I don't get to watch Dynamite live often, but I was off work today, and I have to say I don't get Danhausen like I don't get Orange Cassidy. And that's fine if you don't get Orange Cassidy. A lot of people don't. A lot of people don't get Danhausen. I don't quite understand Danhausen. I just don't care to see Danhausen associated with Hook. Keep Hook far away. David Hart with the $4.99 super chat. Excuse me. My goodness. Personally, I love the Danhausen and Hook interaction after I just made that comment. I love the Danhausen and Hook interactions, and I would like to see option two play out. Love the show. Thanks for all that you do. So option two that I outlined before would be Hook basically being very protective of Danhausen. Not necessarily partners with him, but protective if anybody tries to mess with him. I could live with that. I just don't want Hook to get too, you know, tied into any of this comedy stuff. Because you could really have a potential star in Hook, but, you know, the whole thing with him is he's deadly serious when he's out there. He's not there to do jokes. He's not there to do comedy. I would keep the interaction between them very limited. Joseph Brooks, who do you think was more underrated in helping start the women's revolution in wrestling, Gail Kim or AJ Lee? Gail Kim and Awesome Kong, both. Gail Kim and Awesome Kong, basically, I mean, they took that knockouts division in TNA, and they turned it into something that forced people to take women's wrestling seriously on a national scale in a way that up until that point, I really don't think it was being looked at all that seriously. So even before AJ Lee was a thing in main events on WWE television, I give a lot of the credit to what Gail Kim and Awesome Kong were able to do in that division. But, you know, AJ Lee also played a very big role in WWE, I think, putting more of the focus on the women. She was being featured in main event segments every single week. I mean, we had never seen anything like that before. Except Elizabeth, you know, back when you had the Mega Powers thing going on. How many years ago was that? MattView72. I've been having debates with my friends regarding the proper way to utilize Dark and Elevation. Does it need to be a bigger deal? And if so, how? No, I mean, the whole point of Dark and Dark Elevation is just to give some AEW talents that aren't getting television time or who aren't ready to get television time, to give them and to give independent wrestlers a platform to showcase their skills and what they can do. That's the whole purpose of those shows. So, could they be promoting them on television a little bit more? Yeah. I mean, WWE, look, they have this new show, NXT Level Up. Roxy, the former Ring of Honor Women's Champion, who now has a new name, is debuting, I think, on this next episode. And it made me think about, okay, they have this new Level Up show that replaced 205 Live. They never promote it. I don't think I've seen a single commercial for it, even on NXT. How does anybody even know it exists? WWE, you know, when the network first started, and even now on Peacock, as somebody who is a fan of a lot of the classic content, I would love it if every now and then WWE had a plug of some kind for some random classic content that people can go on Peacock and find. Even if they had a weekly segment called, you know, This Week in History, and they, not unlike what I used to do on my show, and they highlight a certain segment from WWE television, let's say, in the late 80s, the early 90s, and they show highlights of a particular segment, and then they say, you know, for more content like this or for the full show, you know, be sure to, you know, check WWE Network on Peacock and whatever. I mean, they don't do that, though, because time is money on television. They, even on a three-hour Monday Night Raw, for them to devote 2 minutes to promoting something from 35 years ago is something they're just not going to do. I wish they would. Maybe then more people would watch the classic stuff, because apparently a lot of people don't watch the classic stuff on Peacock. Well, maybe part of the problem is the people, it's not top of mind. They don't even know it's there, or they're not paying attention to it. Would it really hurt to have a little This Week in History thing and show? Oh, yeah, this week, oh my God, they're showing highlights of when, you know, the Razor Ramon got pinned by the 1-2-3 Kid on Raw back in 93. And they're letting people know you can watch these old episodes right now on Peacock. It's such a simple thing and they don't do it. So, you know, could AEW be doing a better job maybe of promoting those shows? Probably, but I mean, those shows, they are what they are. You know, they're not meant to be heavily promoted. I mean, they're there for the people who are fans, hardcore fans. They know where it is. They know it's on YouTube. If they want to watch it, it's there for them to watch. And that's it. It's really nothing more than that. Yes, I did interview Gail Kim. Actually, I interviewed Gail Kim. I interviewed Christy Hemme, who was very nice. ODB. Those are among those interviews I did at WrestleCon a few years ago. Face to face. Gail Kim is a beautiful woman. She is. Who's she? Is she married to Robert, the food guy, right? The chef. What's his name? Robert England. Is it Robert England that she's married to? I forgot the guy's name. Anyway, he's a very lucky man. Oh, not Robert England. Jesus Christ. Robert England is in the new Stranger Things trailer for season 4. Robert Irvine. Thank you. Thank you. I got my Roberts confused. Now I'm going to start a rumor that Gail Kim is married to Freddy Krueger. I'm not looking to start no rumors now. Gail Kim is not married to Freddy Krueger. Joseph Brooks, $9.99 super chat. Buy or sell on who is the better promo and overall character? Beat Wyatt. I assume he means Bray. I actually think that kind of fits though. The way that they used to beat Bray Wyatt all the time. I used to call him the eater of pins for a reason. Actually, Beat Wyatt kind of works for the way that he was booked for a while there. Anyway, buy or sell Bray Wyatt or Raven. Also, would you consider that a dream match that you would have liked to have seen or not really? No, that's not a dream match. People throw that word around so much these days. It's no, that's not a dream match. Not for me. But I mean, who is the better promo and overall character? I'd probably Bray, promo probably Raven. I think it's a split between the two. And yes, I do. I watch Stranger Things. I love it. And that trailer for season 4 looks fucking awesome. So I am very much looking forward to the 4th season. Apparently they're splitting it, I guess. The first volume of season 4 drops on May 27th, which is right before Memorial Day weekend, and then July 1st. At least the gap is not that long. You know, May 27th, they'll drop some episodes. July 1st, they'll drop the rest. That's not too bad. And like The Walking Dead, which has taken its final season and cut it up into about 16 different parts, and then they make you wait 6 months between new episodes. Having to wait a month is not that bad. It has been a while, though. It's been 3 years since the last season. That is a long time to wait. That is a long time to wait. Hey, Larry David announced that Curb Your Enthusiasm is coming back on HBO for another season, but knowing him, it'll be fucking 5 years before we see it. At least we know it's coming. When it'll actually be here, we have no idea. Tuxedo T Servo, hope you have a blast commentating at Hog this Friday. Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate that. It's going to be fun. Got some good matches lined up for the show on Friday night. The Briscoes defending the tag belts against Jeff Cobb and TJP. It's always good to get Jeff Cobb. It's been a while since he's been back in Hog. Good old Matanza. No cap. I'm a fan of Joe's, but he's been injury prone. Do you believe if he dropped some weight, he would be more durable? He's solid still in the ring. Well, I think for everybody's health, it would be good if he dropped a little bit of weight. But I think even if he dropped weight, he's still 40-ish, right? He's 40 years old. He's had a lot of injuries. So I don't know that it's going to necessarily make him more durable. I do think, look, if he slimmed down, I do think it probably would help him in the ring, maybe as far as him moving around and stuff, but it doesn't change the fact that he's got a lot of miles on his body. It doesn't matter whether he's 250 pounds or 180. He's still got a lot of mileage on that body. You know, the injuries are going to bite you no matter what. Let's see. No Cap says the big guy will be jobbed out to Orange Cassidy in a lights out match soon. Is everyone burnt out on foreign heels in wrestling? I'm surprised WWE hasn't given us a fucking a Russian villain in light of all this stuff that's been going on. I wouldn't put it past them. I would not put it past them. Brett's Booze Reviews NOLA. $4.99. Met FTR before Dynamite. Dax burned me because my name was spelled with two T's. Even signed my photo. One T is better. Well, he's not wrong. One T is the waiting. Well, I will not burn you. Brett's Booze. Thank you, Brett's Booze. Yeah, I mean, as Tuxedo said, Samoa Joe is 43. And so, you know, it's kind of the nature of how things are going to be. One of the dumbest bumps I've ever seen in my entire life. And I've seen some stupid bumps. I've seen some very dumb bumps taken by people, but still one of the dumbest bumps I have ever seen and the most dangerous was the bump that Joe took in TNA all those years ago. Might have been the match. Was it the match with Sting? I think it was wrestling Sting. And you probably know what I'm talking about. It was in the crowd, and he walked up the steps, and he just dove. He did this running, he got a running head start, and he just dove. And he landed right on his back on the concrete steps. Why would you ever do that? Why would you ever do that? That bump alone probably took fucking 5 years off his career. So when you do dumb shit like that, you're going to have injuries that eventually catch up with you. How he escaped injury that day, I'll never know. But you can't tell me that a bump like that isn't going to come back to bite him all these years later. Now imagine doing stuff like that over the course of your career. It's going to catch up with you. Catches up with everybody. Speaking of Orange Cassidy, there's that orange douche right there in that super chat. Thinks he's me. Hi, I'm Samoa Joe. Welcome to Impact Wrestling. That is something that belongs on an episode of Jackass. It really does. Okay, yeah, it was against Sting at Bound for Glory. What year was that? What year was that? It's insane. I still can't believe you did that. Epsilon Sama, is Tony Khan's announcement about WWE bots? Oh, you know what? You make a good point. Maybe his announcement has to do with the final results of his big independent study. He's going to reveal the results live on Dynamite. Oh, that'll be exciting. That'll be exciting. Can't wait for that. Maybe he'll bring his expert with him. Hulkling 93. Enjoyed the show, but I can't say it gave answers to why should I tune in to Battle of the Belts besides the fact that it's AEW. Can't wait for your take on the AJ and Priest ending. Food Hive. It amazes me how Cody can become one of the best heels in the indies, to the greatest babyface in AEW, to the most polarized, back to being the biggest babyface in wrestling again. That is impressive as fuck. That is something. That is something. We'll see how long it takes before the crowd turns on him, because you know the crowd is going to turn on him. Now I'm seeing these rumors that Brandy might come in with him as an on-screen character. If you want to turn Cody Rhodes heel quickly in WWE, you put Brandy Rhodes with him on TV. There you go. And I don't have any hate. I don't hate Brandy or anything either, but clearly he was getting a lot of heat when he was paired up with her on TV in AEW, And if the idea is to keep him as a babyface, I think that's about the worst thing they could do right now. Cody has been getting good reactions so far. I would not fuck with that. I would keep him exactly the way that he is. There is no need for him to bring in Brandy to manage him right now. She wants to come back in some other capacity. You know, she used to be an interviewer. She was Eden Stiles. We might see the return of Eden Stiles to television. Miz and Maryse against Cody and Brandy at SummerSlam. Oh, God. Food Hive again. The Sound of Gamer Part 2 had me crying laughing. Well, I'm glad you enjoyed my misery. I meant what I said. That looks nothing like Mandy Rose to me in that game. Dry Chicken, I'm back from vacation. Good show tonight, but the ending was flat. I thought that said fat. The ending was flat and fat. Shin Akuma, $5 super chat. Thank you, Shin. Turtlehead, I'm not Canadian, but I feel it would be a travesty for a non-Canadian to win the Owen. Kyle O'Reilly would be my pick. Cassio Black, I was listening to JR's podcast where he talked about the Mankind multi-part vignette. It got me thinking, why doesn't WWE and AEW better utilize vignettes to get talent over? We got a whole bunch of vignettes tonight, didn't we? We got a Darby Allin one. We got a Malakai Black one. I mean, they do vignettes. WWE doesn't do them as much as they used to. Yeah, I mean, look, there's a reason why when I did my top 9 greatest promos in WWE history, that was number one. That was my number one. All the parts, 3 or 4 parts, that was the number one, in my opinion, greatest, if you take it collectively, interview/vignette in WWE history. LinkLex7, Tony Khan, not everyone deserves a lights out introduction. I think when Tony Khan shows up on Dynamite next week to make his big announcement, they should give him a lights out introduction. In fact, the show should start with the lights out, and then the lights come back on, and it's just Tony in the ring, all coked up and all like full of energy and "Welcome to Dynamite!" You know, doing the Tony Khan thing, screaming and shouting at the top of his lungs because he's so excited. It has to be a very Tony Khan-like introduction. D'Arlo Renford, $20 super chat. I'm going to Raw next week. My condolences. In Buffalo, New York, I hope it will at least be a decent show. And do you think T-Bar should join Mountain of Omnipotence stable? Here we go again with the Moo. Moo. That's the new $100 super chat, by the way. Moo. Or should he be repackaged as Dominik Dijakovic again? Just repackage him. Just repackage him and call him Donovan Dijak. That's it. And then he'll either get over or he won't. He could either, you know, work and talk and get over or he won't. Very simple. Juan Bermudez. That was a great show with a weak ending. Can't wait for the New Japan this Saturday. The New Japan. You sound like Bret Hart now. I was watching the New Japan this week. Dry Chicken, Tony Khan's take on internet bots was so entertaining, he got everyone talking or triggered the TK Twilight Zone, as I call it. Samoan Fan 101, will Omos be the next sexual chocolate in WWE? I said we should take bets on how long before he's dancing on TV. Now that they put MVP with him, they're going to try to give him a serious push, but I still say in a matter of months, he'll be dancing on TV. Ojali Burgos with the $10 super chat. With Natty in NXT, do you think this opens the door for Shotzi to be Shayna's new partner? Also, haters in the mud, Lash against Nikita really about to become the Hogan Andre of our time. No, I actually think that Ronda and Shayna would make more sense. I think there should be at least some kind of association between the two. Whether it's just like an alliance, they're friends on TV, or their occasional tag team partners. I think it should be Ronda and Shayna. Shino DePhoenix. I went to my very first AEW event, and it was amazing. So much fun when you're there live. It was the most fun I've had as a fan. Well, that's awesome. I had a great time at my first AEW show. That was the first Double or Nothing in Vegas. I had a blast. It was great. Haven't been to a show since, but it was great. Things have happened since then, unfortunately. There was a whole year that went by, year plus, where there weren't even fans in the building. So that kind of had something to do with that. Quintus Brown, buy, sell, or rent? Bucks against Lucha Bros from All Out. Bucks against Omega Hangman from Revolution. Bucks FTR Part 2. Bucks and Lucha Bros, I think, is probably at the top. I would say, I might go Bucks FTR. I might rent that and then sell on Bucks against Omega Hangman, but I loved all three of those matches. I loved Bucks against Omega and Hangman from Revolution 2 years ago. I thought all three are just fantastic. Food High. Funniest line in wrestling. Hulk Hogan has a 10-inch python. Terry Bollea does not. I hate that even had to come out. LOL, that don't work for me, brother. That was in a court of law. That was said. That Terry Bollea sat there on the stand under oath trying to talk about why. Wait a minute now. Terry Bollea and Hulk Hogan are two very different people. Hulk Hogan has a big python, brother. Not Terry Bollea. Jared M. with the $20. Thoughts on Pat Buck joining AEW? In my opinion, he can only help the promotion. Is that official? I haven't seen anything about Pat Buck joining AEW, but it's possible that news broke as I was preparing to go live. Honestly, I have no opinion one way or the other. Pat Buck was just in WWE. He left. I guess now, supposedly, he's in AEW. I mean, when Pat Buck was in WWE, I didn't exactly see there being much of a difference in the product. So, I have no opinion. Juan Ocampo, can we get clown music during the Super Chat? Well, maybe. RSPW Rewind is going to be back. You know, right now it's an RSPW thing, but maybe as I wind that down for good, we might migrate the clown music over here. A dry chicken, Ring of Honor, six-man tag team titles. Let me in, AEW. Sue. Food Hive, found the clip of Steiner calling Joe fat. Comedy. It really is. It really is great. It's just the way he said it. The way he said it was just, it was so perfect. And dry chicken without flavor, let's all get it out of our system. Ezekiel in WWE looks like Stew Pickles from Rugrats. No more beard, so Nakey is free. All right, let's be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
We, of course, finished our tournaments last week. You guys voted Shawn Michaels against the British Bulldog as your slammy winner, your champion, your favorite match of all the matches in the tournament, and I really can't disagree with that. The women's tournament did not end so well. Becky Lynch against Lacey Von Erich was the winner, which has me thinking a little bit differently about some of you, to be honest with you. But now the tournaments are over, and now we can just be the booker freely. So book some matches here, see what we come up with. We'll start with the men's Be the Booker. See what we come up with here. Be the booker. And we end up with Eric Bischoff, who, again, we picked him last week, didn't we? Or 2 weeks ago. Eric Bischoff, covered in oil of some kind. Either that or the world's largest pen exploded in his hand. As he is being interviewed by the announcer, who looks completely nonplussed by this. This is a normal day for her. I'm just interviewing some guy with black shit all over his face here. Black goo of some kind. Maybe Papa Shango got to him, perhaps. Anyway, let's see. Eric Bischoff. If we land on Vince, that might not be so bad. Eric Bischoff is going to go one-on-one with Jake the Snake Roberts. Mm-hmm. That definitely don't work for me. Well, perhaps we'll have more luck with the women's Be the Booker this week. Let's give it a whirl. Remember, I can only start this up once. Once it starts up, I can't start it again for another 6.5 days. So let's hope that this ends up better than what we just did. We have Lana. Well, I don't know what to tell you guys. I mean, there's no possible outcome here that is anything other than a buzz. So, I mean, what am I supposed to do here? I mean, we'll pick somebody, but I mean, what possible match could this be? Lana one-on-one. Oh, good Lord. Oh, what an image. What an image. At least I was sports entertained by this edition of Be the Booker. See, and they say that I don't know how to book the ladies. I disagree. Doesn't that image just turn you on? Isn't that a turn on for everybody in the chat? Say that I don't know how to book the women's division. I disagree. So anyway, Lana against My Hole, Nia Jax. Oh my goodness. Good Lord. Dried chicken without flavor. Hold on a second. Let me go back to the super chats here for a second. We got one more here from our good friend Dried Chicken. Says, I have lost my interest, let me say that correctly, in the Deeb and Sheeta feud, unfortunately. All right, so he has lost his interest in the Deeb and Sheeta feud. Well, perhaps it's because we get one segment with them once every 3.5 weeks. That could maybe have a little something to do with it. But, you know, that goes to what I was saying before about certain people just not getting the TV time that they need to really get these things over. You know, there's so many people and there's only so many spots. I was not implying anything, by the way, about Dry Chicken, just for the record. I'm sure he does very well for himself with the ladies. Well, I don't want to be spreading rumors about him now. You know, I only got 3.5 hours of sleep last night, so just for the record. Samoan fan, didn't Nia put Lana through 10 tables? Well, no, she put her through 9 tables. I don't believe she ever put her through the 10th one, though. So I believe you are incorrect on that. Dr. Scorpio, who is booking the women's division? Bruce, is that you? Is it Bruce? Is Bruce booking the women's division? No, I don't interact with Bruce. Bruce is not allowed in here. Hey, Steve, enjoy your vacation. He's starting his 5-day vacation. He's heading to the beach this weekend. I wish I was heading to the beach. Although I'd have to wear like 10 layers of sunscreen. So enjoy your vacation. Let's see, who else we got here? Shin Akuma. Take all the matches from Be the Booker and watch them all in AI. AI matches on WWE 2K22. Should be fun. We might do something like that. We might do a gimmick like that. Hey, Eugene, 2013 just dropped a $36 super chat on the stream here. No message, just wanted to show some love and support. Eugene, thank you, sir. You are awesome. You are the man. Chris Underwood. By the way, did you find any Broken Skull American Lager yet? Cheers, my friend. No. I had the IPA, but I actually haven't looked. So, but I'm probably not going to find it anywhere around here. So, Food Hive says, Be the Booker is run by bots. Think bots would do a better job? Samoan fan, that innuendo though, what is wrong with Sala Monster? Are you implying something is wrong with me? How dare you? All right, guys, this has been fun. I want to thank you all for hanging out with me tonight, as always. We always have fun here on these Dynamite streams. Again, a very good show tonight, but not a huge fan of that ending, I cannot say. But we got Joe and Suzuki, and Samoa Joe is the new Ring of Honor television champion, and that sounds like a good night to me. Make sure you heard all the great praise for it. If you want to laugh at me, you can check out Sound Off Gamer, Screwed by Shawn Michaels, almost an hour long. It is up right now on the channel. I'm going to be doing a new one, hopefully in the next few days, as I've learned a few things since I posted this episode. Apparently, I'm not making full use of all the different opportunities that are available to me throughout the Performance Center. And so I'm going to try to make my way around, change things up a little bit, see if Sala Monster can have better luck on day three. So definitely check out I'm loving the fact that I'm able to do these gamers, finally. I have a machine that can actually allow me to support playing these games again. So I'm having fun with it. I hope you are too. And again, on Friday night, there will be no stream because I will be at House of Glory here in New York. You can watch live. You want to hear my commentary and watch the show live? You got a hell of a card. Friday night, 8 p.m., fight.tv. There it is. That is the sign-up page if you are interested. It's only $14.99. So that is where I will be on Friday night. All right. Until then. Be well, stay safe. I'll be back live next Wednesday for another, I guess it's kind of a big Dynamite card, Tony Khan. His big surprise, what's it going to be? Who's it going to be? I don't know, but he's got a new one every week. I'm losing track of all these big announcements. I'll see you Sunday for episode 752. All the stuff that I don't stream about at the end of the week, we'll cover it on the podcast on Sunday. So until then, take care, guys. Thank you for the support.